Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Certainty Talks. On this show, we talk about certainty, a topic that feels more important today than ever before. But all in all, always an important topic. We've got my good friend Paul Sparks here. He's not only a successful real estate investor, but also a certified certainty advisor. A wise man once said, if you look at the last 3 years by months and turn all your negative months into zeros, what happens to your bottom line? That was brought to you by Dan Nicholson. Now, I am personally on a mission to create 100 millionaires. The information on this podcast alone is enough to help you become a millionaire in the next 5 to 7 years. If you'll take consistent action, I assure you, you will become one. And if you get value today, please tag a friend below, share this episode right now. That way we can all grow together. So, Paul, you want to jump into the 6-word updates?
Yep, absolutely. So here's mine. Operating agreements, private lenders, new cohort.
Oh, we're going to definitely have to dive into that. So for me, skills challenge index explains self-sabotage. So real quick, if you guys didn't watch last week's episode, Paul, can you explain what the 6-word update is?
Yeah, it's a way to take your thoughts and bring them into a more condensed version. It forces you to be concise and get your thoughts down in, you know, 6 words or less. So we share this as a way to reflect and journal on our weeks, but really to make, you know, force ourselves to be concise.
Yeah, it's like how you take a blog or a post, something like that, and you got to get it down to 144 characters, right, for Twitter. Now we're talking about 6-word updates. You can get your clear thought into 6 words. Then you really, you know, you've been able to have clarity out of that. So you want to elaborate a little bit on what your 6-word update is, Paul?
Yeah, so operating agreements, private lenders, new cohorts, just different things I'm working on at the moment. As you know, we're going through some process of finalizing our operating agreements, and those are always just a joy to read. So I've been reading through that, and we've been going back and forth and making a few changes. At the moment, I'm working on some real estate deals where we're raising some money, working through some new private lenders, trying to bring some new money on, which is exciting. Developing relationships with new private lenders is always fun. And then new cohort, we've got our next Whale Club cohort is starting on the 31st. So we're getting excited for that. We've got brand new program that we're going to be introducing. It's going to be 6 weeks now instead of 4. Very exciting stuff. We do have a few spots left in that. So I've been working to get that cohort finalized and off and running here in a few weeks.
All right. And then for myself personally, I learned about the skills challenge index, which is basically you got high challenge, high skill, high challenge, low skill, and then low challenge, high skill. And what I've learned is that I only like being in the high challenge, high skill arena. So the moment I get good at something and it's no longer challenging, I'm bored by it, which explains this shiny object syndrome and why I don't finish things. The moment I figured it out, I'm no longer interested. And unfortunately, everyone around me has to suffer that around me. So that's why I say self-sabotage. So today we're gonna be talking about the 5 reasons bad things happen in the market. So Paul, what are we talking about here?
Man, so whether this is crypto, real estate, stocks, whatever, if you're investing, there are certain things that we've observed that lead to bad things happening. And we've been able to synthesize that down into 5 things specifically that we want to talk about today. So,
yeah. So what's the first one?
Well, this is a term from Mr. Dan Nicholson. He calls it the solvable problem. So the first problem is you don't have a solvable problem. And what that means is you don't have a clear goal or understanding of what you're trying to go after here. So we talk a lot about the idea of getting closer versus chasing more. And when people, that's probably the number one mistake that I've made in the past and that I've seen other people make in the past is, you know, chasing more. We see this in real estate manifest itself and wanting to grow the business and scale and scale and scale. But of course, what you really want is more time with your family, more time to pursue other interests and things. And we have a tendency to chase more. And in fact, a lot of these decisions get us further away from what we want. And so without clarity, without a clear solvable problem, you're just kind of flying blind. You're making guesses, you're gambling. In crypto specifically, we see this come out in, you know, people trying to buy the bottom and sell the top. And really the question isn't, well, should I sell? Should I buy? It's like, does this action get you closer to the things that you want, which is your solvable problem?
Right. What I see in the Discord channel sometimes is like, no one ever got broke by making a profit. You know, like you got to take profit. So, I mean, there's so many case in points for this one, right? Like the first one is for me is I got into this business so that I could have more time freedom, financial freedom. What I've since learned is relationship freedom and the freedom to pursue excellence, right? But once we start, we completely forget why we started. So we don't go after time freedom and financial freedom. We go after more. Why? Well, Paul just did a deal where he made $250,000. Now I need to find a deal where I can make $250,000. I saw on a podcast, this guy's doing $500,000 a month. I now need to make $500,000 a month. I'm in a mastermind where these guys are doing hundreds of deals a year, or this guy has a portfolio of 500 properties. Well, now I have to go chase 500 properties. And what have I done? I am no longer chasing time freedom. I'm no longer chasing financial freedom. I'm chasing an object. I'm chasing a target that is not even in line with my target, or at least not the target I stated when I started. So have you seen that, Paul?
Yeah, it's just moving the goalpost, right? It just keeps moving further and further back because of comparison. The phrase comparison is the thief of joy. Mm-hmm. And as a lot of us are type A entrepreneurs, we're competitive. And of course that goalpost moves, especially in the real estate market. There's a lot of shiny objects. There's just it's an infinite number of things to pursue in the real estate world. You know, look at single family. I mean, there's wholesale, there's fix and flip, there's novations, there's seller financing. There's just all these things you can do. And of course you see somebody else doing a novation or a creative finance deal, and you're like, how do I do one of those deals? Yeah. And the question really should be, do these actions get me closer to the things that I want? And this is the problem, is there's just no clarity when we approach investing. It's this idea of chasing more. You know, we see this in the crypto world, the phrase win moon, right? Win moon. They're just waiting for it to rip, you know, waiting for that coin to pump. You know, and I was having a conversation with PD earlier today, and you know, he was telling me like, nobody can buy the top. We've been doing this for forever. You know, these guys who've been in crypto forever, no one can buy the top because it's impossible to know when the top is. It's impossible to know when the bottom is. So what we need is get out of what the outside world is doing, what other people are doing. And we need to look internally and say, like, are these things helping us get closer to what we want? And it comes back to the solvable problem, which is essentially just taking your goals and turning them into a math equation. We got to know where we're starting and where we're going, so we know the most efficient route to get there.
Yeah. So I got another one. Have you ever seen my time management presentation?
I have. Yeah.
All right. So do you remember that part I talk about, like the Tesla, right? Or the BMW hybrid, you know, like I literally bought a hybrid and then I went and actively went to buy a Prius that had a blue plate on it, so I can move it from the Prius to the BMW hybrid so I can drive in the carpool lane. And it sounds ridiculous, right? Like I paid $6,000 for a Prius so I can move the plate over and then sold it for $4,500. But who here wouldn't pay $1,500 so they can drive in the carpool lane whenever they want? I think most people would, but who's taking action that lines up with that? And I know it sounds crazy, but like that is, I value my time, so I'm gonna invest in something that gives me more time. So for everyone that's listening then, you know, what advice would you give someone so they have more clarity on the solvable problem versus the more?
It comes down to, the solvable problem breaks down into really two areas. You have core priorities. Core priorities are made up of things like your retirement money, your cash flow that you need, your reserves, basic things like that. I think of this as a core capital number. So for a lot of us, we say, well, you know, if I had $1 million, I could live the life that I want. If I had $5 million, I could live the life that I want. 10 million, insert whatever number it is based on what your preferences are. And so you have your core priorities, and then you have your preferences. So certain things that you might want. Some of us like to spend 3 weeks a year in Hawaii. Others prefer to, you know, insert whatever it is for you, whatever you want in your life. taking these things and adding them up to try to at least get close to a number that we can work towards over a certain time frame is what the solvable problem is. So for example, you know, you say, well, I want to have $10 million in core capital in the next 10 years so that I can fund X, Y, and Z. Here's my core priorities. That's how we think of a solvable problem. We just need to be able to know whether we're getting closer or further away from our goals.
Yeah, and I think one of the easiest ones to talk about as far as entrepreneurs is we hear so many people say, like, I value my family. I want to spend more time with my family, right? I'm working hard today so I can spend more time with my family. When the question really should be, what can I do today so that I can spend more time with my family? Because if you've got young kids, preteens, teenagers, whatever, like, they value you now way more than later on when they're growing up and you want to spend time with them. They're like, Dad, it's too late. Like, I wanted you in my life when I was growing up, not when we're rich, right? Like, that's not what they want. What was it? How do kids spell love? T-I-M-E. So just something to think about. So what is number two?
Number two is FOMO and urgency. You know, FOMO, we probably don't see this as much in the real estate space, although we definitely do. It's just heightened in the crypto world. You know, you see, it's funny because a lot of people make buying decisions because they see stock or charts going up, right? So they buy when it goes up and they sell when it's going down, which is kind of funny. Most people, you know, that are doing this, they're making decisions just based off what the chart's doing. Mm-hmm. And of course, they have FOMO and they want to rush in. And so what we've seen a couple things, especially with what we're teaching in the Whale Club, is people see this strategy, how to build this business treasury with passive income. And like, it just triggers something in their brain, right? And it's like, okay, I got to move a bunch of money in here. I've got to, you know, allocate to this.
I got to go all in,
right? And this sense of urgency, this all or nothing thinking is what blows people up. I mean, we've seen it countless times in the crypto space, buying the top, selling the bottom because, you know, emotions take over. And so this is really just an emotional problem. It's a human problem. But I'm curious, how do you see this show up in real estate?
Well, so real quick before I answer that, FOMO for us older folks, fear of missing out, right? And then I've seen this happen actually for myself personally in the crypto world as far as missing out on an opportunity to mint something, right? So Discord, if you guys are getting on the Discord, you know, if you're listening to this and you've never been on Discord before, first thing you do is just turn off all your DMs because that's where all the scams are. So like I saw like, oh, there's a minting opportunity, jump in here. And I minted 2.5 ETH. And at that time, you know, ETH was like $3,000. So like that was just gone, right? I threw 2.5 ETH out the window on some total scam. As far as real estate, I mean, I think that you look at masterminds, you know, like maybe you're joining all these masterminds because you don't want to miss out on connecting with some people. You might be buying a course, a mentorship or this and that. And look, I love education, right? But maybe you're buying something because you're fearing you don't have some information that you need. When oftentimes you have the information, you might need some guidance, but oftentimes everyone has the information they need. You know almost all you need to know to run a successful business probably today. You just may not be taking the action necessary. And you feel like if I sign up for this, then this is going to give me everything I need to know now, right? So there's that FOMO situation. Urgency, I mean, we see it all the time, right? Like sign up now before the price goes up. You see this in real estate courses and so on. And then I think also you look at like, you know, unfortunately some people that have been scammed in the real estate world is, you know, this opportunity is closing. You know, I just think back to like all that swampland in Florida when I was a kid, you know, like, hey, jump in now or you're gonna miss out on this opportunity. So I think it exists. We don't maybe see it as much because we're on the front lines because we're actively in the business. But I think for other people that like for us, finding deals is not the hard part. That's not the hard part for you. That's not the hard part for me. And probably not the hard part for a lot of people watching the show. But if you're working a 9-to-5, you got a W-2, you know, and I want to get into real estate. Oh, this deal popped up. I better jump on it right now, even though I don't know the questions to ask on whether there's a good deal or not. So I think that's where FOMO shows up quite a bit. An urgency, false urgency showing up in real estate.
Oh, yeah. So Dan talks about this framework that he calls CASE. I think this came from a military that the OODA loop. I think I've heard this before.
OODA loop, yeah.
Yeah, the OODA loop, but he calls it CASE. So CASE mm-hmm. stands for collect, analyze, strategize, execute. And so like what I do, at least, is I hear about something I want and I immediately jump right to strategize and execute. Okay, great. How do I get my money in here? And how do I, you know, buy this coin? We're going right into it. Or, you know, you go to a mastermind, like you said, and you hear about some amazing marketing strategy that you've never heard of before. And it's like, well, look at all these people who are doing all these deals. It's like, here's my money, please take it. Let me execute on this as quickly as possible. We don't take time to compile. So C stands for compile or collect. A stands for analyze. And we just jump right to strategize and execute. Mm-hmm. And so that was a massive eye-opening experience for me, going through the crypto world, realizing how fast I jump right to strategize and execute, and then taking it back and saying, well, where am I violating this in my real estate business? And I'm just as guilty as you. We're all humans, right? This is what we try to create as salespeople. We're trying to create FOMO and urgency. It just needs to be checked. And this is the things that, these are the things that can wreck people, especially in the crypto world, but certainly in the real estate market as well. Overspending on things that you think you need, you know, when it's like really what you need to go do is pick up the phone and call some sellers, right? Yeah. but what we want to do is we want to find the next thing. We've had this fear of missing out on whatever that magic bullet is. And instead, a lot of times it's like, look, just go back to the basics, pick up the phone and call a seller.
Well, you look at CASE, right? Again, compile, analyze, strategize, and execute. We don't even spend that much time in the strategize. A lot of us, we're like in the last 10% of strategize, and then we execute, right? Because we don't even look at the strategies, we just look at the tactics, right? We're like, oh, that tactic works. It's not that strategy works, right? Because strategy kind of covers like, you know, what are the things that we have to do? Tactics is like the how do we do it? So we take the how, we don't even take the full strategy. We just take a couple of tactics from the strategy and we execute. We're like, oh my God, why didn't this work?
Yeah. Well, and the question needs to also be asked, like, does this get me closer to my solvable problem or not, right? And a lot of times you can immediately eliminate, you know, something that you're considering by just asking that simple question. Does this get me closer or am I just chasing more?
Yeah, exactly. So knowing your game gets you closer, from Alan Walker. That's awesome. That's a great, great six-word update. All right, so what's the third reason bad things happen in the markets?
So number three is that people tend to have micro strategies that are opposed to their macro belief. And we're going to need to break down some of those terms there. Yeah. Let's start with macro belief. I know you're probably familiar with this term, right?
I am now.
Yeah. So we talk about macro belief in terms of what is your long-term perspective. For most of us that are in real estate, we have a macro belief in real estate. We're buying rentals, we're buying multifamily. Some of us have a macro belief in commercial real estate. You could have a macro belief in crypto. You could have one in gold. You could have one in, you know, stocks. You could have one in cash, which although I wouldn't recommend. You could have one in Bitcoin and Ethereum, right? The point is this is a personal preference on where you see a long-term store of value.
Yeah. Well, and I think like the best, right, for our audience, the most applicable is we all got into real estate for, again, financial freedom, right? And this is that cash flow. Like we all got into real estate for cash flow. That's our macro belief. We all believe in it, right? Or I believe we all believe in it, right? But what's the micro strategy for most of the people in real estate? Wholesaling, right? So the active income, right? So that's the micro strategy for passive income. But the problem is, we know that we want long-term cash flow, and we know we want to actively wholesale to get active income. But how many of these properties are we keeping that move into from the active wholesaling into the passive cash flow? Not that many, right? There are a lot of people, like, or the realtor world, like this is like the classic case in point mm-hmm. of violating mm-hmm. the micro strategies not being in line with macro belief. It is shocking to me how many real estate professionals, realtors, don't own real estate. It's disgusting, right? Like you have access to deals, you have access to real estate, and you have the gall to preach real estate and sell real estate and yet not have a rental portfolio, which is far superior to the 401k, the stock market, mutual funds, and everything else, right? So this is the classic case in point of your micro strategies not lining up with your macro beliefs.
Mm, that's a really good one. I had not considered that one. But you mentioned it too about wholesaling. We got into wholesaling because we want to buy real estate.
Yeah.
But how many wholesalers are buying real estate? I mean, it's few and far between. Now, you could argue that, you know, you need a lot of cash to buy this real estate, and there's probably some reasons why. But essentially, you nailed it, right? A micro strategy in that case would be wholesaling. In the realtor's example, it would be selling real estate, right? Yeah. You're selling real estate to do what? Why do you want it? Where are you placing your long-term store of value? Where do you see a long-term macro belief? So, my case in point with this around, you know, because obviously I'm, you know, trying to figure out how to essentially use crypto to get me more real estate. That is the crypto is the micro strategy. Real estate is the macro strategy. So why would I invest in crypto in the first place? It's because I'm trying to get more real estate. That's it, right? Now, there are certain cryptos that I want to hold long term. That can also be part of my macro belief. But another way you might be violating this would be to say you're using crypto, and you know it comes back to the FOMO and urgency and not having a solvable problem. And your favorite coin, you buy it, right? And it pumps. Cause that'll happen. And let's say it does 100x, like we saw Guard do pretty much. Well, the question really is, do you have a long-term macro belief in that? Or are you using that as a tool to get you more of your long-term belief, right? Yep. And that helps, it helps to make decisions. It helps to know when to take profit, right? Are we taking profit to go lock in our macro belief? Or are we continuing to make decisions that get us further away?
Yeah. And I think you look at the, what we're talking about, the investor framework we talked about, I think last week or the week before, which is exactly it, right? Like if you are clear on your micro strategies and you're clear on your macro beliefs, then one tool you use is the investor framework, right? Is like knowing what I know now, would I do this again? And so, yeah, I think if you're, I guess another case in point right now, right? Is with the investor framework is there's a lot of wholesalers or fix and flippers right now, they're holding on to deals that maybe they should let go, right? Like, hey, maybe I need to chalk stuff for 20-30K loss. And I'm also talking to myself here, right? I'm not excluding myself from this, right? But maybe I need to just take this loss now because I know my money would be better used elsewhere, right? Like there might be a better deal that comes along that I can't take advantage of because I got my money tied up on this deal that I just need to get, I just need to cut ties on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best investors take their losses quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. It's a tough pill to swallow, and that goes back to your urgency, right? Like we know we should sell, but we're not because we're now riding this emotional roller coaster, and then when it goes down, we're upset that we didn't sell at the top or on the way up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is one that it sounds obvious, right? Make sure all of your micro strategies are designed to get you more of your macro belief. But I looked around and I was like, man, I'm violating this all over the place. You know, I was using real estate money to get crypto, but then not taking that money off the table from crypto to get me more real estate, which is really what I wanted, right? So the active money I was making in my business was supposed to go to get me long-term real estate, but I was using it to buy crypto, which again, I have a long-term belief in certain cryptos and things like that, right? So it fit, but what I'm now starting to realize is, okay, but we need to figure out how to get the money from crypto back into long-term holds, because that's where I see, you know, my long-term macro belief.
Yeah, and then again, not to belabor this point, but you know, I have a lot of entrepreneurial friends that say they want to spend more time with their family, but they're working 60, 70 hours a week, right? That is
bingo.
A case in point to look at, is my macro belief and my micro strategy, is my action today lined up with what I'm telling myself? The movie, you know, The Greatest Showman, I talked about this before, like that was a classic example of like, this is what I say I want and here's my actions completely violating it, right? I'm lying to myself and saying I'm doing this for my family when truly I'm doing this for myself. What is the fourth point?
Number four, we call this frequency of exposure. And you can just sum this up to saying, stop staring at charts all day. In crypto, that's what gets us, right? Is this frequency of exposure, constantly looking at data. What we've actually found is that more data is not better. What you need is the right data at the right amount of time and the right frequency of it. So I can just relate to this really well in the crypto world. It's really tough when you can pick up your phone and watch that chart. In crypto, it's so volatile, right? The price can swing all over the place, which causes a massive emotional reaction every time you're doing it. And really what you're doing is you're just trying to get that dopamine hit, right? Let's call it what it is. You're trying to look at the chart to be like, yes, another 5, 10% today. But what we also know is that an equivalent gain feels worse than an equivalent loss. So, you know, let's say you've got $100 in your portfolio and it's moving around all day and it jumps up to 110 and then back to 90. And each time, and you're looking at this every single time, right? And then it goes to 120 and you're like, woohoo, I'm rich. And back down to 80 and you're like, no, I'm poor. And it finishes the day right at 100, right where you started, right? You didn't gain anything. You didn't lose anything. But the emotional toll you've absorbed through that process is significantly higher than it needs to be. Point is like, if you just looked at that price once a day, you wouldn't have even seen all those variations. And so we find this manifesting itself in people saying, you know, I'm in crypto for the long run. I got a long-term macro belief in crypto. And it's like, okay, then why are you looking at charts every day? Because all you're doing is incurring an emotional damage to your system. Frequency of exposure is a real thing, and I don't think you realize it until you experience it. It doesn't show up as much in the real estate world. We're not sitting here looking at the value of our homes on Zillow every day. Refresh. Tell me how much it's worth. Has it gone up in value?
I'm sure there are some homeowners that do, but not, they'd be the minority, extreme right. minority.
For sure. So that's what frequency of exposure is.
So, and I think that kind of goes back to macro belief we were talking about a moment ago, right? So Alex Becker is someone I follow a lot, right? Obviously I have a Neo Tokyo citizen. He's one of the founders of Neo Tokyo. So I'm paying attention to that. And he just posted yesterday, like, I believe, my macro belief is that stocks are done and crypto is done until we have a major correction. So he's literally sold everything, right? If that is his macro belief, then he should not be checking anything every single day, right? Right. He should be just, for the next month, he probably shouldn't look at anything, Bitcoin, Ethereum, or anything else. And then you got, for us, the real estate side, you know, what is the right frequency of exposure? Maybe it's quarterly, maybe it's annual. You know, one of the things we talked about for our realtors that we've trained is like, hey, you know, sit down with all your clients once a year and just examine their portfolio. Give them a market update. And it's not necessarily to, you know, you don't have to run it like what you would get from your mutual fund or prospectus, anything like that. But there's an opportunity to sit in front of a homeowner once a year. It's like, hey, you know, here's where you're at. And then just be top of mind. But, you know, I think once a year, probably not as often as it should be. Once a quarter, maybe. But real estate isn't volatile like crypto is. Although, you know, if you and I get what we want and we figure out how to effectively tokenize all properties, who knows how volatile real estate will be?
Yeah, agreed. I think it shows up in real estate in ways that are slightly different than in the crypto world. You know, you could think of this with, we manage teams, right? We have salespeople and we have businesses that we run. And, you know, I'm not going to my team every single day and saying, how many calls did you make? Now, some people do that, right? Some people, their business. Yeah, right. So it's a matter, I think it comes back to as well, playing your game, right? There is an appropriate frequency for each player. For you guys, it might be, we're gonna look at this every day. And too much would be, we're gonna look at this every hour. For us, we don't look at it every day. We look at it on a weekly basis because we've got a little bit smaller team. But you can look at this across anything. The gist here is that more data is not always better because there's fluctuations, right? So you might look at it at one point when it's up, and then you look at it again and it's down. But what we're trying to see is a trend line. And so in general, I just look at this as like one data point does not create a decision. We can't make a decision off one data point. If you're going to make a decision, we need three of them to create a trend line. So we've got to look at it on an appropriate amount of time to be able to make that decision. So it's just different in every business. It's different for every player. But defining that frequency for whatever domain you're playing in is important, so you know not to look at it more often than that, because data can fluctuate, it can skew, and it can, you know, because of that, influence our behaviors negatively.
Yeah, you know, one place it might be showing up in real estate is right now everyone's looking at the market data every single day, and it's not changing every day. It's trending for sure, but looking at it every single day is probably injecting, again, more pain than necessary, because we already know it's going down. We already know that the market's correcting. Do we need to look at it every single day to know the market's correcting, or do we just know on a weekly basis that the market's correcting?
Right.
But there are some people.
Looking at it every day, you're incurring this like anxiety. Oh my gosh, the market's, you know, the market's crashing on Tuesday. Oh, the market's crashing on Wednesday, and it's like, yeah, but what is that? How is that influencing your behavior?
It's not. All it does is.
And this for the long term. Because we know that the markets go like this. They fluctuate. That's how markets work.
So I feel like I'm throwing all the realtors under the bus, and I'm obviously in that arena, right? I think all the realtors right now are freaking out all the homeowners, and they're taking way lower offers than they should be taking because they've never experienced a normal market, or very few has experienced a normal market, because we haven't had a normal market in 6 years. And in my entire 15-year career, I've only had one normal market, and that was 6 years ago. So I think there are a lot of people, maybe a lot of realtors, overanalyzing the data and freaking their clients out. So
let me give one more example, if I could, of frequency of exposure. And I had to check back in my notes to remind me of this. But think about if you're trying to lose weight, right? And weight fluctuates throughout the day. You're different. You weigh differently in the morning than at midday than at night. And so we don't weigh ourselves three times a day. We might weigh ourselves once a day, same time every day. We might weigh ourselves once a week, because, you know, I know that throughout the week, like, I'll jump around, you know, between 175 and 180. Like, I could literally be jumping, depending on the time of the day, depending on what I ate previously, like, I will move through that spectrum. And you might look at the data and you're at 180, and then, you know, at night, right? And then the next morning you look at it and it's like 175, and you're like, I'm losing all this weight. But then you look at it the next day and it's back to 180 again. So the point is, if you look at data too frequently, it can lead to misleading results. And so we have to define that frequency that's appropriate, because it wouldn't make sense to weigh ourselves three times a day.
No. And, you know, Paul's in good shape, so it doesn't matter what time he weighs himself. For a heavier set person like myself, I only weigh myself in the mornings, because that's the best number of the day. It just hurts my feelings if I measure it after lunch. So after lunch, after dinner, it's a worthless statistic, only in the mornings. So before we get to the fifth point, you know, these are things that we talk about in the Whale Club. These are things we talk about at our live events. You know, we've had Dan Nicholson here. We've had Nick Peterson on here, right? Like, these are the kinds of things we talk about, again, in the Whale Club, at our live event in September next month. So what's the fifth point?
Number five, we say asymmetric risk and reward. So this actually brings us back to the barbell that we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. And what do we remember about the barbell? It's a bimodal strategy, which basically means, think about a barbell. If you're lifting weights on a barbell, you don't load weights in the middle of the bar. It'd be really tough to pick that barbell up if you were loading weights in the middle. We load them on the end. So it's either here or it's here. And on one side, we have reliability, which means we want to know consistently what the results are going to be. So, you know, Nick said it well last week. If you don't know on Sunday how many hours you're going to spend in your business that week, it's not reliable. It's a job. It's volatile. It could take, you know, 40 hours of your time. It could take 20. It could take 60. We all have been in these businesses, right? I mean, I still am trying to get my business to be more reliable. So we have the reliable side, and then we have what we call asymmetry to the upside on the other side. And the best way I've described this is there's a lot of upside and very little downside, right? How do we manufacture situations where the upside is massive, but the downside is really small? And what we see is there's a lot of ways to take advantage of that. This is what we teach in the Whale Club. These are the frameworks that help us make these decisions. And so I'll give you a great example. Let's say you've got a marketing, let's say you've got a business where one of our businesses, right? So if I, one of the things I'm deciding right now is whether to keep direct mail, keep going with direct mail. You know, because we'll spend, let's say $15,000 a month on direct mail. And if we get a deal, it pays it off. It pays for that, right? Let's say it's a 2-to-1. Our average deal size can be somewhere in the $25,000 range. So let's say it's just 30, right? We spend 15 and we make 30. But we could also spend 15 and make zero, right? It's marketing without the right systems can be very unreliable. Now, for some operators, direct mail is extremely reliable. We spend X, we get Y. Right? If you've got that kind of a business and you've got that kind of reliability in your business, then it might make sense to consistently spend, you know, what you know you'll get back. Hey, we know we're going to get a 3X return. We've got years of data to show this. We spend 15, we're going to make 45. But without that reliability, you could spend 15 and make, you know, 30, 45, but you could also make zero. We would call that a symmetric risk. The upside is good, but the downside is also pretty bad. We lose 15,000 or we make 15,000. You know, those are kind of, you know, both sides of symmetry. What we would rather do is we would rather have a scenario where we let's say we spend 15 with really the only risk of maybe losing a couple thousand. Like the downside is small, but the upside is massive. And what we do in the Whale Club is we really focus in on that point right there. How do we manufacture situations where we've got a ton of upside and very little downside?
Yeah. I mean, you look at, so for example, we made a business decision a couple of years ago to stop text blasting, right? And I know that text blasting works. You know, you're texting homeowners, right? So we made the decision not to do it. It was a business decision. And we knew that we were costing ourselves money, right? But we said it's worth removing it because TCPA compliance was getting more and more serious. The all the cell phone providers are taking it more seriously. And if we get busted, because we know people that have been busted, you know, 9K, 30K, 50K, the worst instance I've heard is someone settling for 500,000. That was for cold calling, not for texting. But like these fines add up pretty quick, right? So for me, I was like, okay, it's no longer worth it for me to put a target on my back to get sued, you know, trying to do some extra deals. And very recently, you know, we actually got ensnared in a TCPA situation that we didn't do it, but we got ensnared in it and we won in court. It's like, well, now I know my risk is low. So guess what we're doing now? We're going back to texting. Like I've been sued for texting and won. So my conclusion here is my risk is not as high as I thought it was, but there's still upside. So I'm gonna start text blasting again because the risk versus reward is now lower risk and still high reward. So taking that into real estate, that is an application for me.
That's a great case in point. Yeah, that's really good. We see this in the crypto world. This is how we approach our business treasury. We teach how to, you know, business owners, real estate investors, how to build what we call a business treasury, which I'm sure we'll dive into on another one of these calls and specifically what that is. But, you know, what we're able to do is keep our core capital protected, reliable, consistent. We're not looking for moonshots here, right? We're looking for just reliability. What can I can count on, let's call it 8, 9, 10, 11, 12%, something like that, very consistently. And we create what we call house money, right? We get this money, we earned it as interest, and we got it for free, I like to say. We got this, you know, for free. And if we take free money and expose it to upside, to, you know, an opportunity where it could go to zero, but it could also do a 10X, 100X kind of thing, right? We have these opportunities all over the place in crypto.
Yep.
And the downside is, well, you just lost your free interest that you earned. Principal didn't get touched. But the upside is massive. So I think of I forget exactly how it goes, but it was a quote that, let's see, Jeff Bezos said. Let me find it real quick. Let's see. He says, if you have a 10% chance of 100x return, you should take that bet every time, even if it's going to feel bad 9 times out of 10. Right? Mm-hmm. If you have a chance to make a 100x return, you should take that bet 9 times out of 10, even if you're going to lose. Well, even if you're going to lose 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
100%. And I just think that people in the real estate world are missing it. We're not approaching crypto as a gamble. We're approaching it as like, how do we create house money that we can then expose to asymmetry to the upside?
Yeah. Yeah. So just kind of to break it down a little bit further. So what we're talking about with the business treasury is taking what you have right now, not risking any of it, have it spit off a little extra money, and take that extra money that we wouldn't have had otherwise, and exposing that to a larger upside.
That's exactly right. It sounds so simple.
It sounds simple, but you better do it right, because if you push the wrong buttons, it can all go to zero. Right. And so that's what we talk about in the Whale Club. So, you know, I was looking at this, right? Case in point. Some people know this about myself. I'm a kung fu enthusiast, right? I'm not great, but I think I can hold my own, right? I feel comfortable in a bar. I should win 9 times out of 10. And so what I learned, what I realized as we were talking about the barbell strategy is like, oh, my style of, you know, combat is to minimize risk and not even maximize upside. It's just reliability. My job is to just keep you from hurting me long enough until you make a mistake. And then, you know, I end you. But it's just a reliability thing. I'm not going for the knockout. I'm just trying to keep myself safe. And that's a reliability. And everything is geared towards reliable. There's no middle ground. There's no upside. It's just everything is just geared for reliability. I know it's going to be there. It's going to be consistent because of the system that we use in martial arts.
Yep.
Yeah. So I didn't see. Go ahead.
That's a good one. I really like that one. That one I think about quite a bit, and it really frames, I think, how we approach our investing. Our investing strategy is very much informed by number five there. How do we create asymmetry to the upside, which is basically just like, how do we tip the scales in our favor so that the upside's big and the downside's pretty small?
Yeah. So again, just to sum it up, 5 reasons that bad things happen in the markets. You can go through them again.
5 reasons. So number one is you don't have a solvable problem. You've got to have a goal that you turn into a math equation so we can know whether we're getting closer or we're just chasing more. Number two, FOMO and urgency. We got to slow down. Crypto is a dangerous space. And so we have a tendency to rush and to be move into something very quickly. We see this in real estate masterminds where, you know, it's the next big thing and we got to get in, we got to do it right away. So we got to be careful of that. Number three is we got to make sure our micro strategies are in line with our macro belief. Otherwise, we're getting further away from the things that we want. Bring it back to, you know, the entrepreneur who wants a business that can support more time with his family, yet he continues to hire more and more people and expand into more and more markets.
Scale.
Yeah. It's scale. It's like, well, this is chasing more likely and getting you further away from what you say your macro belief is, which is time with your family. And that can be applied to really any asset class. Number four, frequency of exposure. More data is not better. We've got to define the appropriate amount of data that we need in order to inform our decisions and stop chasing data because we want dopamine hits. And number five is we want asymmetric upside and reward. So we want to take bets that have a really high upside with a really low downside, or they're very, very reliable.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are all great points, things that I learned recently in you know, learning from Paul. So like, you know, Paul is the certainty guy and he's been teaching me these principles. So I really appreciate it. And if you guys want to learn more, right, we talk about this and many other principles as well. Inside the Whale Club, right? Go to blockchainwhales.com. And then our live events in September, we got, you know, again, myself, Paul, Dan, and Nick. And then we got Dr. Jess Spencer, you know, the the guy that Tiger Woods calls when he's going through a tough patch, right? So
Tiger Woods, Chris Voss, Jim Quick, Lance Armstrong, some really, really
Bono.
Strong. Yeah, Bono. It's pretty impressive, the folks he's
with. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to hearing Dr. Jeff Spencer speak live at our event. And then we also have, we took everything we talked about today, but we also, put it into a document someone can download. How can someone find that document?
So we have just opened up a members portal, I guess, on our website. So if you guys go to blockchainwhales.com, you can get, we're going to be publishing new content every single week from here on out. We actually just came out with our real estate investors dictionary on crypto. So if you're brand new to this, we know that the biggest hurdle right now for real estate is just the language barrier. We're saying a lot of words and talking a lot about a lot of stuff that is just foreign to most folks in the real estate world. So we've taken the time to take those words and define them so people can really understand what we're saying. So go on that website and check out that PDF right now. And then today, I believe we just got up the 5 reasons why bad things happen in the market. So you can read in depth, a little bit more about this. And if you're interested in this type of stuff, this is what we talk about and teach in the Whale Club. These are the principles that help inform our decisions. So if any of this is of interest to you guys, definitely go check out blockchainwhales.com. Tons of info, videos and stuff we're going to be adding every week now.
All right, perfect. All right. So as usual, thanks for everyone for watching. And thank you, Paul, for teaching me. I'm a lifelong student and I really do love this information because I know it's making me a better investor.
Yep.
All right. See you later.
See ya.